Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Good morning,
Roto Experts.
To the end zone!
The mark of fantasy excellence.
You have to be careful about who you think is stepping forward on the depth chart.
It's caught for a touchdown!
You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts in the morning.
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Back in the baseball groove. And I guess you're back in the football groove if you like eight teams in two-thirds empty stadiums. We'll talk about that as well today. Welcome to the Roto Experts in the Morning Sunday edition, live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern, every Sunday morning to kick off your fantasy week. I am Scott Engel, the Managing Director of RotoExperts.com. I am the king. I am fantasy, as here always joined by my good friend of RotoExperts.com, Joe Galina. Joe, how are you? It's getting to be that time. Tomorrow, the Pirates will report pitchers and catchers to spring training in Bradenton, Florida, and the Seattle Mariners will report pitchers and catchers to Peoria, Arizona, with several teams due to report in the days following.
How's it going, Scott? Great to be with you again. Yeah, excited for the start of baseball season. You know, it's freezing cold up here in the Northeast, so thinking about the summer, it warms our hearts, right? Getting ready, preparing ourselves for our upcoming fantasy baseball drafts. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, lots going on in the world of fantasy right now. We'll talk about it later in the program. The Alliance of American Football, for those of you who completely have no lives other than football, started last night with eight teams. And actually, in the last minute, fanball.com actually put out a daily fantasy AAF game. For those of you who are interested in that, I don't know why. I guess you're really, football's almost like a drug to you when you need another hit, and we haven't hit free agency yet. And NASCAR will unofficially start today. We have the Clash at Daytona, which is an exhibition race with 20 drivers. That we are a week away from the Daytona 500. If you want a complete breakdown of who to start and who to park today in the Clash of Daytona, and the games are both FanDuel and DraftKings. You can listen to On Demand, the Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network to help you set all your lineups. But we'll talk some baseball today. We'll talk some off-season football. We'll have Davis Maddock of RotoExperts.com at 9:20 a.m. Eastern Time, and Todd Zoll of MastersBall.com at 10:20 a.m. Eastern Time on RotoExperts.com. We're talking fantasy football 365 days a year, but the Roto Experts analysis continues right here on our shows and on my daily podcast throughout the week, which you can listen to on demand. We are still playing fantasy baseball. I have a mock this Wednesday over at Roto Ballers, Joe.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. What's the scope of the is it a 12-teamer, or do you know where you're picking from?
Not yet. Not yet. Okay. It's 3 days away. They haven't listed the draft order yet.
Yeah. Really important to get in the swing of the drafts. You know, we're watching the NFBC ADPs right now. We had some news. I was curious to see, I'm sure we'll be talking about Francisco Lindor to see how his ADP has been affected since the news about his calf strain. But, that's a big part of my preseason prep, is doing as many mock drafts as I can.
Yeah, and when we talk about any fantasy sport, We really like to draft as close to the season as possible. And if you have any questions about your upcoming drafts in baseball or you want to talk off-season football with us, 844-843-6879 at any time. It's 844-843-6879. But you mentioned Francisco Lindor, a big blow for the Cleveland Indians. And this is why you like drafting closer to the season. Looks like he's going to be out 7 to 9 weeks with a calf strain, which will probably put him back sometime in May. Right now, as of Friday, and it really hasn't budged as of Sunday, no updates yet, Francisco Lindor's ADP in the NFBC was 4. And that's due to drop with news like this. Inside injuries say this is one of the worst sort of injuries a player can in Major League Baseball can suffer, and that even when he returns, inside injuries is saying he'll get off to a slow start even when he returns. So this is why you want to draft close to the season, like I just said. And I could, how many rounds could you see his ADP falling, going from top 5 here?
Tough to say, but you know, when you talk about that, he might not be ready till May. I mean, I could see him dropping a couple of rounds. You know, when I think about a calf strain injury, it worries me because you remember Josh Donaldson dealing with his calf strain for a while, and it really, really put his season back. I mean, he missed you know, a few months last year. It's just not an easy injury to come back from. So he's definitely going to fall. I mean, he's definitely going to fall from number 4 overall.
Yeah, we know that, but what I'm asking you is how far do you think he's going to fall?
Yeah, I think he could fall a couple rounds.
What, to like 3rd round?
No, I could see that happening.
If you were drafting today, when would you, what round would you start to think about Francisco Lindor?
I think I would wait till, like I said, about the 3rd or 4th round. I'm a really conservative drafter, Scott. If I am going to invest a high draft pick on someone, I want to make sure that I'm going to try to get as much as possible from that player. I don't want to have any you know, worries that this guy, you know, maybe he does start the season, you know, a few weeks. Like, let's say he starts the first week of May, and there's always that opportunity that he could reaggravate that injury. So that concerns me. He'd be a guy, tell you the truth, for me personally and my the way that I draft and the conservativeness that the way I draft, I would avoid him at this stage. But that's just
probably me too. But you know, then there's the other side of it. You know, I've done this before, where sometimes I want to stash a guy, and you have to remember that baseball's a very long season, 162 games,
absolutely
half a calendar year. And then once you come bring him back, it's kind of like you got him at a discount.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I bring up Josh Donaldson. When he did play, you know, he put up the kind of numbers that we expected from him. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, if you could get him at a severe discount and hold on to him, like you said, I mean, the fantasy baseball season's a marathon, right? The fantasy football season's more of a sprint. So if you could stash someone with Lindor's, you know, upside, we know what he could do. More power to you.
Yeah, it's a big blow for the Indians too, as well. A significant offseason for them. You know, the fans a little bit unrest there in Cleveland, and now they're probably going to have you move Jose Ramirez over to shortstop. You know, what do they do at third base, Joe?
Well, I'm looking at their depth chart right now. They have Moraf and Chang. Personally, I think that you know, you got Josh Harrison still out there as a free agent. Marwin Gonzalez out there as a free agent. Maybe they should kick the tires and look at possibly adding one of those two guys.
Yeah, what if they don't go in free agency, though? You think they're just going to have a hole there that they have to fill with much lesser player?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you know, you also have, you know, Kipnis in there, too. Right now he's slated to be their second baseman. They could move him over. I mean, you know, if I was them, I would look to the outside. It doesn't look like they have much, right now on their roster to fill.
Yeah, but you're talking about using that guy for a month, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, do they really want to commit to a guy for a month? Maybe a guy who's a Swiss Army knife, like Harrison, like you mentioned.
Yeah. He could play different spots in the infield. So, yeah. And look, you know, like we said, we know that the baseball season is very long. A guy like Harrison, who could play second, third, and even some outfield, could be a useful acquisition for them. Probably get him cheap.
So if you're in an auction draft, is like this one of the first names you throw out there to get people to spend more money?
I like that. Yes. Yeah, that is a good strategy to use.
Yeah. Well, Terry Francona has already said that he's strongly considering moving Jose Ramirez to shortstop.
Yeah. Jose Ramirez, look, that's the beauty of having these players that could fill different spots. Ramirez, another one, one of the top, he's like, what is he, top three in terms of NFBC ADP, power, speed. Indians got him for a bargain, and he's able to fill in a couple holes for him as well.
Well, the Cleveland Plain Dealer says that the Indians would probably like to leave Ramirez at third base. ESPN is saying that Ramirez is an option, but Max Maroff, Mike Freeman, and Ryan Flaherty could all play it there. And those are really only AL-only options, or the Indians could sign a free agent. None of the guys that you mentioned, the Cleveland Plain deal is saying Alcides Escobar, Jose Iglesias, Jose Reyes, or Didi Echeverria. At least if they signed a guy like Echeverria, they know they would get good defense there. And Echeverria is the kind of guy, we've seen him before with Miami. He doesn't give the team much in terms of a bat, but I observed that covering Major League Baseball in the past, solid clubhouse guy, plays good defense. That might be a nice pickup for them, but there'll be no fantasy impact there.
Yeah, and in real life, like you say, if a guy could play some good defense, a good clubhouse presence, a solid guy that could fill a couple holes for you, that's just as important. I'm just looking at the Indians, roster right now, and I'm a little surprised. I mean, we talked about Lindor missing several weeks. Jose Ramirez. I mean, this team offensively has some question marks. I mean, you look at their outfield with Naquin, Leonis Martin, and Luplow, and they signed Carlos Santana back. I mean, this is a team that it's going to be interesting to see how they pan out this year. I mean, they still got the pitching. They were looking to move Kluber, but nothing happened with that. They have decent starting pitch with Kluber, Carrasco, and Bauer, and Clevinger, and Bieber, too. I mean, that's a nice starting pitching staff there. But in terms of offense, this could be a big blow, the loss of Lindor, even though it could be, for a month and a half after the season.
Leonis Martin was actually a potential surprise. He was actually something of a surprise last year. Actually, somebody that got in towers in the reserve rounds and actually gave me pretty good numbers. Not the type of numbers I necessarily expected, but Martin showed, especially with his last tenure with Detroit, that if he gets some playing time, that he can put up some decent numbers. Last year, he had 255 with 11 homers and 7 steals and just 318 at bats with an OBP of 323.
Yeah, I mean, he's a nice player. I mean, you could fill in a deeper fantasy league. Not somebody that, that I would look to draft, but somebody probably that you could pick up off the waiver wire if in the middle of the season you need some help. Like you said, he's got a little pop, could steal a base or two for you. So he has some value, but more as a fill-in.
I don't think he's probably going to go undrafted, though. When you're talking about, you have 30 guys that you can put on a roster, a guy that, if he gets 500 at bats, maybe gives you like 15 at the very least. And I'm being conservative, why would a guy like that go undrafted?
He's done that before. Yeah, I mean, looking back when he played in 16, had 15.
He was more of a speed guy.
Yeah. 15 home runs, 24 runs batted in. I guess to your point, maybe, look, after a while, sometimes it gets hard to fill those five, if you're starting five outfielders. So
yeah, the
maybe
county
very,
numbers.
Yeah. So maybe very deep into drafts. But, but still, in my opinion, not a guy that you're going to want to make one of your starting five.
Well, I guess the NFBC depends. Agrees with you because the ADP is 356.
Yeah. All right.
I would take him in a 30-round draft. Okay, coming up next, we'll talk about the Phillies and JT Realmuto and the impact fantasy-wise and NL East-wise. Coming up next on the Roto Experts of the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Makes me think of since spring training. This is, I think of this kind of song. This is the kind of leisurely song where you're watching batting practice or workouts, something like that. Gives me a baseball type feeling, Joe.
Yeah, it's kind of a happy sounding tune, right? Yeah, you could picture yourself, just having a good time. The 80s were a fun time. Some good music coming out of the 80s.
Yeah, I remember being at Shea Stadium and hearing Huey Lewis's Heart and Soul during batting practice.
Yeah, big Huey Lewis fan?
That was a good batting practice song. Huey Lewis's Heart and Soul, Sean. Yeah. But our producer, Sean Engel, probably going to have cue that up for her. What a marvelous producer he is.
He really is.
No, I wasn't a huge Huey Lewis fan. I'm not like Chris Bavona, our in-house producer. Chris Bavona's like a fanatical Huey Lewis fan.
Yeah, that's kind of odd. He's had some good music. He needed a new drug and all that stuff. I think he's had some recent problems with his voice. But, a voice from the 80s.
A lot of those older singers are having problems with their voices.
Yeah, it happens, right?
If you grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and you're one of those older guys, it's, you see it a lot of the older singers starting to have voice issues.
Yeah.
But then again, not even if you're an older guy. I noticed, people in their 20s and et cetera, if they listen to rock and roll, they get into the classic rock bands, more than today's stuff.
Well, nothing better than classic rock. And, we've talked about how The Who's coming back on tour. The Rolling Stones are back on tour. Classic rock.
Rolling Stones are always going to be on tour.
They will. They're going to be propping them up for years to come.
People making jokes like that 20 years ago.
Yeah. I remember in the early 80s when Tattoo You was their album with the Start Me Up? And I thought that was going to be like one of their last albums. But look how long they've continued to put out some good music, man. Kudos to them. Continue to rock.
The Grammy Awards are tonight. You going to be catching that at all?
I'll probably tune in a little bit. Try to keep up with what's going on in music today. How about you?
Yeah, you going to tune in for a little Cardi B? Is that your kind of thing?
Yeah, me and what's his name? Kraft. See what Kraft did? Wasn't he dancing with a little Cardi B before the Super Bowl? Enjoying himself?
Yeah.
Why not?
There you go. Alicia Keys is hosting tonight. Now that'll be interesting. I don't know how much personality she has to actually like pull this off. I mean, she's an incredibly talented singer and songwriter. It's just like, you know, listen to any of her music, just anything she sings, turns to gold. But does she have the personality to pull this off as a host?
I guess we'll find out. I guess the producers think she does. So, like you said, but I love her music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, let's get back to baseball here. Maybe play some Alicia Keys during batting practice, too. The big story is that a lot of the big-name free agents are still out there. The latest on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado is that Bryce Harper is involved in talks reportedly with the San Francisco Giants, but I think fantasy players want to see where he's going to land already before they start doing his drafts. We're talking, this is the week of spring training, and the two biggest name free agents are still going unsigned. Looks like the market's going to have to drop. We've heard some rumors this week that some other teams are starting to get back involved in the mix for guys like Harper and Machado. If he were to go to San Francisco, that's not necessarily a hitter's park or a great lineup, but you figure that Bryce Harper could put up the numbers anywhere.
Yeah, I was looking at his numbers in the AT&T Park in 67 at-bats. They're pretty bad. I mean, 164 batting average, 305 OBP, 284 slugging, just a 588 OPS. Look, I like Harper, but when you look at it, I mean, he's batted below 250 in two of his last three seasons. I want to look at his number. Wasn't he really slumping for a long time last year?
Yes.
Yeah, and, it was a concern, because he was facing his free agency year. So, look, I mean, he's definitely one of the top outfielders in baseball. But you just have to, take a step back and really look at what you're getting with him. Really, really plays the game hard, which sometimes is a detriment to him because he ends up getting hurt.
Yeah, and you look at Harper. Is this a guy that you could win with if you're a Major League Baseball team? The Washington Nationals never won a playoff series with Bryce Harper in a uniform.
Yeah, that's a good question. Is he a guy that could he has the capability where, he could carry a team for a few weeks. He's hit 42 home runs in his career before. He's stolen, 10-plus bases, 20-plus bases. But that's a good question. Is he a guy that could he be the centerpiece of a team? And you bring up a good point about, how the Nationals have fared with him in their lineup every day.
Or how they have not fared well enough. It kind of reminds me of the Braves of about 5-10 years ago. They had a lot of superstar players. They had Upton and Hudson and even Chipper Jones towards the end of his career. McCann, they had a star-studded lineup, and they could never do anything in the playoffs. The Nationals might go down being remembered like that as well. If Harper leaves, the whole Bryce Harper era never brought anything to Washington in terms of victories. But yet I think it's still a lot of the fans want him back. Manny Machado, there's been reports that the Yankees are now actively engaged in talks with Manny Machado. There was a report that the figure of $220 million was bounced around in some reports by Sportsnet New York, and that the White Sox made a final offer of him of $170 million. But at some point, with both Machado and Harper here, these guys are going to want to get things settled and want to get into spring training.
Absolutely. And, when you look at the White Sox are an interesting situation there because they traded for his brother-in-law, Yonder Alonso. There's their mutual friend, John Jay, is on that team. What I had seen was the White Sox had offered him 7 years, $175 million, but $25 million a year, and they're not budging. The story was that the Yankees a while back had, because they met with him in December, remember, they offered him, according to Jim Duquette, he said it was either 7 to 8 years. A total of $220 million. So, I mean, look, these guys were thinking that they were going to get, easily sign a $300 million contract, and that's just not happening. And, whatever reason, is it talking about collusion among the owners? I mean, to me, it's just, owners being a little bit more prudent. You know, you look at these 10-year contracts that we've given to players in the past. Like, look how much money the Angels are still paying Pujols. And Miguel Cabrera is not the player that he used to be, and he's still getting paid mega bucks. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But you're right, with spring training starting now, thank God these guys aren't pitchers, because, with pitchers, you want them to get their throws in, with under the watchful eye of their coaches. But you still want to see where these guys are going to end up.
Yeah, they're going to probably sign all of Machado's friends, maybe even his hair cutter. Right. You're trying to get him over there to the White Sox. Right. Seems like the Padres are involved in every rumor, but they end up not signing anybody. It almost seems like they're the Twins. Like the Twins were supposed to be a link to every big-name free agent last offseason, and they didn't end up signing anybody. It seems the Padres are the big tease of the offseason now.
Yeah, supposedly they've spoken to both of these, or reached out to both of these players.
Machado, weren't they mentioned as a possibility to trade for Kluber at one point?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was a rumor as well. It is a little different from, a few years back where, these teams actually have some money to spend now with the revenue sharing and everything. Remember how the Mariners swooped in signed Robinson Cano a few years back. I mean, some of these teams.
Yeah, the Mets with Cespedes waited it out. They did. I'm thinking that the Red Sox might do that with Craig Kimbrel, because it's very interesting. You know, Brad Boxberger got signed by Kansas City. We'll talk about that a little later. But the Red Sox have just passed on about every closer candidate that's out there. And I believe if they were to start the season today, that Matt Barnes would be their closer. Kimbrel is still out there. He's still unsigned. Maybe they can bring him back for a bargain rate, but there's still one name out there. I don't think too many people have talked about it other than myself. Bud Norris is still out there. If the Red Sox want to save some money, Bud Norris has proved over the last 2 years that he could close. And he's been much better as a closer than as a starter. And maybe they go. Bud Norris is the last name to drop. If they don't sign Norris, I think it's either wait on Kimbrel or go with Matt Barnes here.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting name, Bud Norris. And you're right. I, doing some of the research for the show, I noticed that he was still out there, and was a decent closer. I mean, look, he saved 28 games for the Cardinals last year, another 19 for the Angels previously, and a guy that moved from the starting rotation and became an effective closer. So yeah, he could be a bargain.
Yeah, because he could certainly fit with somebody. A few teams still looking for bullpen help. That's a veteran who's shown that he can get it done and has made the transition to the bullpen pretty well. Actually lost a job down the stretch. I believe he was battling some health problems, and then he started to melt for a little while, and then he got replaced by the Cardinals. But we've seen this before with some closers that they'll melt in one situation and they'll come back and they'll be fine in another. They're almost like kickers.
Yeah, I mean, the closer situation in baseball is just really tough to figure out, other than, obviously you have your Chapmans and your Jansons, and kudos to your Mets with picking up Edwin Diaz, but you just, it's such a volatile position, and not only does it take pitching skill from the individual, but someone who's able to adapt and pitch in pressure situations, so
I always believe in that. Talking to a lot of major leaguers about it over the years, I believe, you know, that there's certainly a mentality to being a closer. You know, few people disagree with it, you know, some of the analytical types. But, you know, talking to a lot of players over the year, pitching in the ninth inning is different than pitching in any other, especially when you're on the road.
Absolutely. And, you know, you sometimes you see when a pitcher who's a closer is brought in to pitch in non-closing situations, how sometimes they don't fare as well. You know, that some pitchers thrive on being in that position where the game is on the line and they have to, you know, real focus on the task at hand. And when they're not put in a pressure situation, they kind of fall apart.
Yeah, we mentioned Boxberger signing a one-year deal with the Kansas City Royals this week. One of the last big possible closer types. He did lose the job at one point last year. We saw him close in Tampa Bay. Wily Peralta did the job effectively down the stretch, but now maybe it remains to be seen. Will there be a closer battle in Kansas City in spring training? Or Boxberger could be used as a nice setup bridge for Peralta if they feel that they want to keep him doing the job.
Yeah, either of these guys have shown that they could be closers. I mean, Boxberger had done a pretty good job for the Diamondbacks heading into September. He had a 3.5 ERA heading into September, but then he just imploded. Had an 11.37 ERA in 9 appearances during the month of September. But 71 Ks in 53 innings last year. You know, what I heard, and it is a fluid situation, is that Boxberger would probably be the guy to close and Peralta would set up. But it could definitely go the other way around. And the contract that Boxberger signed, a cheap contract, 1 year, $2.2 million, could make another million more through incentives. So big bargain for the Royals.
You mentioned Edwin Diaz. He is the first closer off the board in the NFBC so far with an ADP of 48.1. He's the 15th pitcher off the board right after his new teammate, Noah Syndergaard. He is the first closer off the board. And then after that, it's another five spots until you get another closer. Blake Treinen's the second closer off the board.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, I usually wait on closers way deep into my drafts. You know, I don't like investing, you know, high picks on guys, even though, I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, who are you going to end up with? You just mentioned Diaz, Aroldis Chapman, Jensen. I mean, you know, but with what we spoke about just a couple of minutes ago in terms of just the volatility and the fluidness of all these bullpens. And look at what the Brewers did with their bullpen last year. You're almost like a closer by committee, you know, and you wonder if that's going to be the trend.
The Reds are actually talking about doing that and not having Rossiel Iglesias close games exclusively anymore.
Right. You look at, you know, and in a way, you know, a closer by committee kind of makes sense. You know, take advantage of your pitcher's strengths, depending on the lineup that's put in front of them on a nightly basis. So, to me, you know, that could be the future.
Yeah, I probably do the same thing that you do. I don't spend on closers. I mean, look at Brad Hand. You know, he's a 31st pitcher off the board early this season, according to the ADP. Last year, Brad Hand was nowhere to be found in terms of ADPs. So what I usually do with closers, I kind of balance it out. I'll spend up on one guy, I'll get another middle-range guy, and then I'll get somebody towards the end and maybe play around with closers on the waiver wire. I'm not going to spend high money or early draft pick on a second closer. He's got to be middle of the board. So if I'm talking like a 23-round starter type of draft, that maybe I'll take my first closer around the 10th round, the next maybe around the 15th or 16th, and the other one maybe in the last round or two, like 22nd or 23rd. So I kind of balance it out. Because you can always find closures on the waiver wire during the season.
Absolutely. Yes, you can. You know,
especially if you're playing with Fab rather than waivers in order. We'll talk JT Realmuto next.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, getting ready for fantasy baseball. Going over some of the latest news if you have some fantasy baseball questions. 844-843-6879. A lot of off-season football talk to come. Davis Maddock of RotoExperts.com will join us at 9:20 a.m. Eastern. But one of those big cleats fell in fantasy baseball this past week when JT Realmuto finally, it seemed, after, I don't know, 10, 15 years of being exiled in Miami and being wanted to be traded, finally was moved out of Miami to Philadelphia. The Marlins waited for a long time. Realmuto was demanding a trade since last season. Can you blame him? I mean, this has been the third big Marlins teardown. After the 1997 World Series, they immediately got rid of everybody. After the 2003 World Series, it took them a little time, but they eventually got rid of everybody. And after they failed to make the playoffs for several years, and look, Giancarlo Stanton and all those other guys never reached the playoffs, and they were paying him a lot of money, Christian Yelich, they tore everything down, and here's the final piece of the Marlins puzzle being torn down. I just saw a tweet about somebody excited about having like fifth row seats for the Marlins this morning, and the Marlins Twitter account retweeted it. I'm like, you got fifth row? It's like, why do you want fifth row? You could probably sit first row. Nobody else is going to be there. It's, you know, they have a combination in their lineup of unknown minor leaguers and retreads like Neil Walker and Curtis Granderson. You know, some people who cover the team say, you know, they have a real long-term plan here to rebuild. But when you look at the on-field product, they could be losing over 100 games this year, the Marlins.
Yeah, they won 63 last year. I think it's going to be tough for them to even hit that mark again. And it's hard to believe that Marlins have won two World Series in their time, right? I mean, but like you say, they just it's amazing, right? But they, like you said, they keep on tearing it down and building it up again. You know, a lot of teams, you know, look to the way that the Cubs built themselves up from the bottom up, and the Houston Astros as well. It's going to be a while before the Marlins could you know, get themselves turn themselves into a contender, in my opinion, because even, you know, the experts aren't real thrilled with the their minor league system as of yet. I mean, the big get in this JT Realmuto trade was they held out for Sixto Sanchez, who supposedly eventually could turn into a top of the rotation kind of guy. But you got to really feel for the Marlins fan base.
What fan base?
Exactly, right.
Yeah, I mean, I lived down there in the 90s when they won their first World Series, and people really got on board with them. And I remember I was living down there, and I remember watching on television like the Marlins' first opener. And the first few years down there, they had decent fan support, and then they won a World Series. But after they tore the team apart in 97, they it seems like they really lost the face of the South Florida baseball fans that were there, and they never came back.
Yeah, and they actually, like we talked, that they won a second World Series too, and I guess what, the fans didn't trust them anymore, right?
No, they didn't start coming out till like late in the playoffs to watch the games. And, you know, that's not really a baseball town. Mm-hmm. You know, living down there in South Florida, they don't seem to like hockey much either. It's You know, it's really football or basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, the Heat will draw pretty good when they're winning. But there's nothing to see. I was surprised that they got a new ballpark a few years ago.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was funded by the public, I believe.
Yeah, but, a lot of it was.
Yeah. So it is interesting. I mean, I've never lived in Florida, but I can't imagine going to see an outdoor outdoor game and then in July and August, it's got to be just...
Well, they closed the roof, though. It's air-conditioned. Yeah. They could close the roof.
All right. Well, then that's a little bit a little bit better. But, yeah.
When I was living down there, though, they played a pro-player stadium, and, you know, that was an issue. Mm-hmm. It's like they scheduled the home games for, like, 4 p.m. Eastern because it's... I remember going to games in Florida. Like, I went to a spring training game a minor league game in Clearwater at, like, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and nobody was sitting near the front because you die just sitting out there. I went to a Miami Dolphins game at, like, 1 o'clock, and I had seats in the 50-yard line, like, 10 rows away, and you die there. You absolutely fry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In football, people like, don't talk often enough outside of South Florida. The Dolphins have a real home field advantage down there in Florida. Opponents can really, really wear down if they're not used to the heat.
Yeah, yeah. Happened to be in Florida a few years back in the month of August and went to go watch the Tampa Bay Bucks and their training camp. And I could not fathom being one of those players having to practice in the kind of heat that they were practicing in. So, yeah, I agree with you. You know, these Florida teams during the months of September have a big home field advantage, when they play in Florida.
No advantage to playing in Miami if you're a baseball player. JT Realmuto has to be glad that he's going to Philadelphia. His home splits while he was with the Marlins, the first four years of his career, the fifth really doesn't count because it was just five games there, though. Batting average at home of .244, an OBP of .292, slugging percentage of .384, OPS of .676, and an ISO of isolated power of just 139. Those numbers get a significant bump away from Miami, when you look at his stats. .310 on the road, OBP of .358, slugging percentage of .494, OPS of .852, and an isolated power of .183. So, big difference. The isolated power actually on the road the last 2 years was actually over 200, well over 200 for Realmuto. .220 in 2017 and .236 in 2018.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, you look at what he did last year just overall. .277, 21 home runs. The stolen bases have come down. I mean, he never was a guy that was going to steal 25 bases for you. But as a catcher, he was a guy that gets you, you know, like 8, 10, 12 stolen bases in a season. Look, I mean, Phillies are getting a nice product here. Good defense, not a great defensive, but very good defensive catcher. Like all catchers, going to average you probably like 130 games in a season. You got to love, like you said, those home-away splits so that you expect that he's going to put up some good offensive numbers. And look, I think it was a good trade in a way for both sides because, like I said, I like the Marlins. At least the Marlins held out for Sixto Sanchez. But Philly's going to be an interesting team to watch this year.
Well, when you look at Realmuto, a lot of the early projections I saw before he would trade, it was around .270, maybe 15-plus homers. And I think that's got to jump going to Philadelphia. You talk about a guy that could probably hit 25-plus homers in a better lineup, in a better ballpark. Mm-hmm. He hit 18 last year, and I think you're going to see an increase in the run score because the speed just doesn't translate into stolen bases. That translates into more extra base hits, more runs scored. It'll depend on where they put him in the lineup, whether it's mm-hmm. be second or fifth or whatever, but that's going to translate into steals. But right now, he's got an NFBC ADP of 54. I could see that jump in 10 to 15 spots moving to Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, he's according to what I'm looking at on NFBC, he's the number one number one catcher being taken. Sanchez is right behind him, and Salvador Perez. I think this could, move him.
That really separates him even more from the rest of the pack.
Yeah, yeah, I think that the move is definitely gonna, garner some interest in him this season. And you look at you talk about his power numbers. You know, past three seasons he's had 31 and 30 doubles. So if he could turn some of those doubles into home runs, playing in a better hitter's park in Philadelphia, he could take that, like you mentioned, a mid-20 home run mark this season's definitely doable.
When you look at how thin that position is, and you look at the possibilities from a speed perspective, and possibly 20-plus home runs and hitting around 275, 280, are you willing to take JT Realmuto in the third round, Joe?
In a one-catcher league, I probably would hold out, but in a two-catcher league, third round might still be a little early for me, but
I think he's definitely in play in the fourth.
Yeah, he could be. Yeah, even in a one catcher league, though, Scott.
No, in a two catcher league. I'm used to playing in two catcher leagues.
Okay.
A lot of people don't like that, but right. Traditionally, that's what a lot of fantasy baseball leagues have been attuned to.
Yeah, in a two-catcher league, then yes, you'd start thinking about him in the fourth round because when you look at the guys, the catcher position, one of the weakest around. I mean, I don't know. You look at it at number 12, Williams Estudillo from Minnesota. He's got a little pop to him, but, you look at some of these numbers. Danny Jansen, number 9 ADP from Toronto. Buster Posey might not hit double-digit home runs this year. He's number 8 for the Giants. So it's the catch position very thin this year. And in a two-catcher league, going to be hard to roster two good catchers.
Yeah, it's a real mute, though. It's depending how much on you're concerned with position scarcity. I could see him going as early as the third round in some drafts. You look at, number 4 in ADP right now is Wilson Ramos, and, now playing for the Mets. But I don't remember the last time Wilson Ramos stayed healthy.
Yeah, and it's a shame because he... a definite offensive force. He's 31 years old now, but you're right. I mean, if this guy could have just stayed healthy, you look at, his 2016 season with the Nationals, 22 home runs and .307 batting average. I think that was the year, wasn't it, the year that he had that either eye surgery or whatnot that helped him see the ball a little bit better?
Right? Yes.
So, it'd be interesting to see what kind of a season he could put together for the Mets if he could just, catch 130 games. I'm looking at some of the projections. They're looking at maybe upper teen home run totals and maybe like a .280 batting average. And look, if he gets in, 500 at bats, put that home run total in the low 20s.
Mike Zunino is the 11th catcher off the board of the NFBC, and that's where I'm hearing some Jorge Alfaro comparisons. Hit over .260 last year, but limited sample size. The guy strikes out a ton with a very low walk rate. Defensively, he's got even a stronger arm than Realmuto, and maybe even a better pitch framer, but we don't worry about that in fantasy. But you talk about comparisons to Zunino, that means very low batting average with some pop there. And then you mentioned that Sixto Sanchez was the prize guy that they wanted to pick up. The Marlins, in a lot of their talks, wanted to pick up a top prospect. Sixto Sanchez is a 5'10 kid who throws 100 miles an hour, but durability is a question. And he hasn't seen a huge strikeout number so far in the minors, but still reports were that this was Philadelphia's best pitching prospects since Cole Hamels, and maybe now it's Miami's best pitching prospect since the late Jose Fernandez was in the minor leagues.
Yeah, got a good fastball, right? They're saying he could hit 100 on the radar.
Yeah, that's a good fastball. That's pretty good if you hit 100. Yeah, I think
not bad, right?
No, not too bad. No.
Everybody could do that, right? These days, right? Everybody.
Oh, yeah. On MLB The Show, I could do that. Yeah.
Got a good breaking ball. Size has been his question, and a little bit of a durability, some injuries in the past. But, yeah, I mean, look, Marlins got what is looked upon as to have been the Phillies' top pitching prospect. So, you know, based on the Marlins having pretty much given away Giancarlo Stanton, you know, I guess they had to make a better showing. They held out a little bit on this trade.
Yeah, well, look, they wanted to get a top prospect, and I even saw one of the trades that was floated out there that had three-team trade between the Mets, the Yankees, and the Marlins, where the Marlins would get Sanchez and Andujar, the Yankees would get Noah Syndergaard, and JT Realmuto would go to the Mets. It was floated out there, but it never got close.
Some pretty big names playing around there, right? What do you think about Sanchez this year?
The batting average was absolutely disgusting last year, but he's got nowhere to go but up. But, you know, so look, somebody's going to take the shot earlier than me. Last year we saw him going so early. You know, the ADP obviously has certainly dropped. He's, you know, he's still the second catcher off the board with an ADP of 58.36. But I actually might wait a little bit longer when you talk about the ADP of Salvador Perez, 110.73, third catcher off the board. I got Perez at a discount last year, and I was very, very happy with the numbers that he put up.
I'd rather wait
a little longer for Sanchez. I mean, for Perez. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm not a big Sanchez guy. Batted 186 last year, and just watching him play every day just looked awful at the plate. Fooled on a lot of pitches, and just from a real, you know, perspective, a terrible defensive catcher as well. You know, so you know, when the Indians were floating around the idea of trading Kluber, I was like, why don't the Yankees dangle maybe Gary Sanchez? And I know that he's a former Indian, but, you know, Frazier, the kid, the outfielder that we have, you know, maybe, you know, try to get a discussion going that way. But, you know, tough. We want to see if he could bounce back, but it's got a long way to go, Sanchez does.
And, of course, it depends on what scoring format you play in as well. As an OBP league, I think you would want Salvador Perez a little bit less. Never been one of his strong suits. We'll start talking fantasy bait football coming up this next hour here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Lots to cover. Which former Pittsburgh Steeler is going to end up in New York?